2-year position in an exotic land, a cause for excitement, and some alarm. There is so little which is familiar, so much which is strange. The faces of the people, what are they thinking? What is it that they see when they look your way? Best not to stare. Turn your attention elsewhere, to that spot where there are no faces, no eyes to meet your own. The Vanishing Point.
I remember a saying they have in that country, although I can no longer speak it in their dialect. The traveler may tell all that he has seen on his journey, but he cannot explain it all. That is the way I feel about the story of Joseph's brother. I heard it from Joseph. I went to see the brother, and afterwards I saw... What did I see? I thought about it. And think about it still. But I do not understand. And I tell it to a lot of people. A bit like the Ancient Mariner, although not because I was directly involved, not because I have a pettiness to expiate. Perhaps by the telling of it, I hope to make sense of it. To make it real. Or perhaps I simply offer it the way returned travelers in the old days might hand round something exotic after dinner. The vertebra of a white whale, for instance. Rhinoceros horn. An ostrich egg. The left hind foot of an elephant.
I feel something knocking against my eyes. Somebody kicked my head. I have written tamale, akra, takoradi.
Sit down, you two.
Is this Africa?
This is it, or one little part of it. But you must sit down. The road is too bumpy.
We want to see.
I know, but you must sit down.
Will we turn black in Africa?
No.
Why? Why won't we turn black in Africa?
Joseph was our cook steward. A kind of legacy to us from our friends Tom and Sheila, who had been out there for 2 years and had left a few weeks before our arrival. As we bumped up the road from the port to the university where we were to live, I took his picture out of my passport case and looked at him. My cook steward. A handsome, smiling, gap-toothed man.
Lucky you.
I'd never even had a cleaning lady, and now here I was with a cook steward. I looked at his picture again and then out the window. Women in beautiful, bright-colored clothes stepped off the road and stood staring at us as we passed. Small children appeared at the edges of villages, jumping and shouting. Later we found out that Bronyi was the word for white man. Two men, barefoot, their clothes slung over the left shoulder, stood talking seriously at a crossroads. Each had a Singer sewing machine on his head. Our friends had written us that Joseph could read and write and was an excellent cook. He would have his own quarters next to ours. I tried to imagine giving him orders. The huge trees of the rainforest towered above us on either side. Lorries honked merrily and sped past us on blind curves, their sides bulging with produce and people. Most had signs painted across the back. Jason?
Hmm?
What's Psalm 100 about? That's the third time I've seen that on the back of a lorry.
I'm sure I don't know.
Fear a woman.
I'm glad you're driving.
Nearly there.
The don't mind your wife chap bar. Tarzan Transport.
Fear a woman.
Sam's Cold Store.
Ah.
Maybe we can come back into town tomorrow and explore. Hotel de Kingsway. Jason.
What's the matter?
There was something written on a blackboard outside that gas station. A message. It said, Rex, 8:30 tonight. Pay up or die. We were surrounded by taxis, lorries, walking figures, noise. All of a sudden, the strangeness caught up at my throat. What if our cook steward didn't like us and put something in our food? This wasn't the British Empire anymore. How did these people really feel about the white man, however well-intentioned he might be? The newspaper I had bought as we had left the ship had a long editorial on neo-colonialists. That was us. Jason, that sign.
Oh, come on. It was probably a joke. Anyway, it's nothing to do with us. We're here.
There's Joseph. Hello, Joseph. Hello.
Hey, hello.
We brought you presents.
Oh.
It was only the next day, when I asked Joseph about the sign, that I found out Rex was the local cinema. I laughed and was ashamed of my original interpretation. There was, from the kitchen, a rich smell of baked bread and ground nuts roasting in the oven. Every night, the drums.
And some strange creatures screaming over and over again from a distant tree. Did a cook steward protect you from the darkness and the drums? Rex. Pay attention at 8:30.
Jason.
Rex.
Jason. Was asleep.
Monkey, banana, cocoyam driver. Monkey, banana, cocoyam driver.
Good
monkey,
night.
Banana, cocoyam
good
driver.
Night.
Monkey,
banana,
bye,
bye, bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Long kick from Turkowski. Headed away by Jack Charlton down to Nobby Stiles. Stiles with a long ball through to Ball, and Ball will run for all he's worth after this one. He turns.
You know,
in.
Joseph,
can Hurst get a shot in?
I could put the children on the bus. It's just that they seem to like you doing it.
Yes, madame.
I think you spoil them. Have you ever been married, Joseph? Had children?
Yes, madame. But my wife a bad woman, madame. She no good at all. At all. And a child as well.
I'm sorry. Where are your wife and child?
In her village. Not far away from here. But she not be my wife any longer, madame. She find a new husband. When I went to her, she put something in my soup to poison it. I'd be sick for a long time, sick proper.
She tried to kill you?
She poisoned my soup, madame.
That's terrible. And will you find a new wife?
I am talking to the daughter of one of the market women. but I think I do not have a lucky soul.
Well, good luck to you, Joseph. I will keep my fingers crossed.
Madame?
It's a way of saying I'll be wishing you luck. We cross our fingers. I don't know why.
Yes, madame. What do you like for dinner? Chikinga, curry, stew?
This last was a mere formality. Joseph had taken complete charge of the kitchen. He already had plans for dinner. He was wonderful. Perfect. Some of the other women had 4, 5, 7 stewards.
They lie, they steal, they import their wives in their raggedy pickings.
It's not like
you. You don't know how lucky you are.
No.
You're one of the lucky ones, my dear. You don't know how
much. At 11 o'clock each morning, Joseph would bring me a cup of coffee and we would enjoy a cigarette and a gossip together. Mostly gossip about the university compound. So-and-so was a bad woman. She could not keep a servant for more than 2 weeks at a time. Veronica, the pretty nurse, girl next door, was no good at all. The daughter of the market woman had thrown his gifts on the ground. Generally speaking, he seemed to feel that women were no good at all. Then he would ask me, what did I want for dinner? But, most of all, he told me about his brother.
Hey, madame, my brother. Madame.
Joseph's brother was a lorry driver on the Cape Coast, Accra Road, and a great hero to Joseph. The boss of the lorry park was a brother as well, but by a different mother and much older. It was a good job, if a dangerous one, and the brother had nearly enough saved to buy a sheet-iron roof for his house. To Joseph, his brother lived a life of adventure and thrills. If the conversations flagged, I would say, well, Joseph?
Madame?
How is your younger brother?
Eh, hey, madame!
As he told his new tale, our steward's hands would clench with excitement. He would grip an imaginary wheel or use the broom as a stick shift, explaining to me yet again that...
The Cape Coast Road, madame, be the sweetest road in this country. Paved proper and with a fine breeze blowing across from the sea.
Joseph imagined himself up front in the driver's seat, laughing with the mate, honking the horn, scattering women and children, goats, chickens, all manner of lesser creatures, passing inferior lorries on dangerous curves, and at equally dangerous speed.
Watch out, Mark! Watch out!
Then the tale ended. He would blink his eyes and laugh and go down into the kitchen to make a salad for lunch. How very unadventurous his life must have seemed compared to that of his younger brother. What is the name of your brother's lorry, Joseph?
God is back in me.
One morning, in his 8th month with us, toward the end of the dry season, when the land is so parched for water you swear that green is gone from the world forever, and tempers flare like matches, Joseph came to me in great distress.
Knock, knock.
Yes, Joseph, what is it?
Please, madame, I have to return to my village.
Why, Joseph? What's the matter?
My brother, madame.
Your younger brother?
Yes, madame. They say he be sick proper.
Fever?
Yes, madame.
Well, what can you do?
Please, I beg you. I must go.
You don't have to beg me, Joseph. Of course you can go. Come back as soon as you can.
Rubbish about brothers and fevers.
Don't say we didn't warn you, woman.
2 weeks later, he was back. 2 weeks of the gas cylinder running out in the middle of cooking dinner. The children whining for mashed banana, the way Joseph makes it. Of stumbling around a kitchen as hot as an inferno. Of washing up. How quickly I had managed to forget the tyranny of housework.
Mommy, read us a story.
Not just now, lovey.
Mommy! Mommy!
Jason!
Joseph's back.
Well, Joseph, welcome back. He went to put his things away, and to my surprise, did not return for his cigarette or gossip. Neither that day, or the next, or the next. He did his work, but he was not the happy Joseph we had known.
What's the matter with Joseph? Why doesn't he laugh?
Do you suppose the brother died?
God, he's back. The next day, after the school bus left, I went next door to his quarters. This was something one didn't do as a rule, but I wondered if perhaps we could help. There seemed to be a lot of flies around, and as I came near, I could see they were gathered over a calabash bowl which was resting on a forked stick jammed into the ground. The flies were interested in whatever was in the bowl. Joseph was sitting some yards away under the pawpaw tree, just sitting and staring into space. His eyes were bloodshot. Hello, Joseph. Hello, Joseph. Would you like a cigarette? Absently, he took two, and lighting one, he stuck the other behind his ear. Joseph, is your brother dead?
Is your brother dead?
Dead? No, madam. My brother be not dead.
What is it, then? What has happened?
Eh, madam. No one knows the story of tomorrow's dawn. My brother was driving his lorry from Cape Coast to take him on a certain Monday night. It was very late, madam, and the lorry was nearly empty. As he was driving along, a woman waved him down from this side of the road. He stopped and she got in. She was a fine looking woman, but just very strange in black velvet.
Go on.
There are things, madam.
What things? What are you talking about?
Madam, ghosts. Opaifo.
She was a ghost. A witch.
I don't know what she was. And my brother, he thought she was a bad woman.
A prostitute?
Yes, madam. One of those. And he put her on the front seat between himself and his mate. He told her he loved her and said he would take her to take him on to sleep with him. She did not speak, but she smiled and shook her head and gave him a piece of paper with the name of the town she wanted.
But nevertheless, Joseph's brother sped through the town of her destination without stopping. He led his mate out at the junction to his village and went on to Tekiman, where he spent the night in a rest house with this woman. He bragged to his mate the next day and said how beautiful she had been, except for one strange thing. She would not speak to him. Not at all.
At all.
A few days later, on his regular run, He suddenly stopped the lorry and told his mate he could see the woman in black velvet standing by the side of the road. He began to shout.
Oh, if you are good, it is I who will go with you.
No one else could see her, madam, no one.
But his mate saw her the first time.
Yes, but one time only, never again. It happened again the following Sunday.
Oh, if you are going, it is I who will go with you.
When an elder of the village was consulted, he said the woman must have been a witch, and he made some medicine for the young man to bathe in. The next morning, he appeared quite well and set off on his regular run between Cape Coast and the capital.
He shouted. He stopped the lorry and began to weep.
The mate found another driver in the next town. And by the time they reached Cape Coast, the brother was talking.
Passa, passa, madame. Crazy talk. It makes no sense. That's when they sent for me. He did not know me at all. We go from shrine to shrine, madame, from priest to priest. Nothing is in his God. There's nothing anybody can do.
So you came back here?
Yes, madame. What would you like for dinner?
Things were never the same after that day. Although he was as kind and attentive as before, some spark had gone out of Joseph. Letters came saying that the brother was now completely mute, and that another brother had taken over the driver's job on the lorry named God is Back in Me. Within 2 months, Joseph's brother had reverted to childhood and had to be led around by the hand. Joseph, sweeping up or cooking or listening to the chatter of the children, brooded on the cruel fate of his brother. He stopped his search for a wife, and we did not dare to tease him.
Joseph is sad. We love you, Joseph.
When the Easter holidays came, and I could leave the children with my husband, I offered to drive Joseph down to his village, so he could see his brother for himself. Down we went towards the coast road, reversing that journey of so many months before. Joseph rolled up his window as we went through the rainforest. Don't you want to roll down your window, Joseph? It's awfully hot.
No, madam. Please roll up your window.
Why? What are you afraid of?
There are things.
In the forest?
Please, madam.
All right. Other than that, he hardly spoke the whole way down. It was noon when we got there, and the sun was almost vertically overhead, beating down fiercely from a cloudless blue sky. It created intense colors and hard shadows, and I had to squint at first to see anything at all. The brother was sitting quietly in the yard, and I didn't notice until I went to shake hands that he was in handcuffs and chained to a tree.
He had tried to hurt himself. It's better this way.
Joseph, to bring some medicine.
Bring some medicine.
I hear you've been ill. How do you feel now?
I feel something knocking in my eyes. Somebody kicked my head. I have written Tamale Accra Tagrati. One city is worth 100 pesawas.
As for the woman in black velvet, said that he did not recall her. I left Joseph there for a few days and set off for home, wanting to get through the forest before dark, and the drums began. It was a relief to drive with the windows rolled down, and to think that the rains would soon begin again. We'd been here nearly a year. Only one more year to go. There were too many things here to make me nervous. Too many things I didn't understand. And then, from the deep gloom at the edge of the road, a figure detached itself, held up its hand, smiled at me. I did not stop. Would you? Would you? I pressed my foot to the accelerator. I told myself that what I had seen was only an accident of light and shade in my own overactive imagination. But oh, she was beautiful. If the brother had to suffer so, why could he not at least have kept the intensity of his illusion? As for myself, I never saw her again.
It is the path you do not fear that the wild beast catches you on. It is the path you do not fear that the wild beast catches you on.
Psalm 100. Mind your own. Fear women. Signs painted on the backs of lorries. Something to contemplate in a traffic jam in the sweltering heat of the city. But should you find yourself traveling the road some night between Cape Coast and Tetchumland, your headlights may pick out a dark lorry up ahead with a name which is, in fact, its destination, the vanishing point.
The Woman in Black Velvet by Audrey Thomas. Featured in the cast were Kim Horsman as the narrator, Dermot Hennelly as Jason, Blue Mankuma as Joseph, Alvin Lee Sanders as his brother, Susan Williamson as the English woman, and Shane Punt and Nikki Larson as the children. Music was composed and performed by Obo Adi. Sound technician was Gene Lovrock, with sound effects by Jay Hyreen, and the production assistant was Dagmar Kafanka. The series script editor is Sandra Rabinovich. The musical theme is by John Roby, and the voice of Vanishing Point is David Calderisi. The Woman in Black Velvet was produced and directed in Vancouver by John Giuliani. The executive producer of Vanishing Point is William Lane. Next week on Vanishing Point, don't miss Seeing God by well-known Canadian playwright Carol Bolt. Until then, I'm Art Cuthbert, wishing you good night.